Questions about faith, sexuality, and gender are some of the most pressing ethical concerns facing the church today. And this is why, as many of you know, I've worked the last few years on producing small group learning experiences. I don't like the phrase small group studies. I've been through small group studies, and quite honestly, I haven't found them super compelling. They just seem kind of flat and two-dimensional. And so I wanted to create a holistic experience where people can be engaged through videos, through testimonies, through really in-depth questions, through accessible and yet thoughtful and in-depth reading material. And I always have a heart for people that want to go deeper. What if somebody, you know, reads 40 Days of Purpose, whatever, and like, well, I want to go deeper into each little section here. And so we created additional resources that if somebody wants to go deeper, they can go online, read more pastoral papers on various questions addressed in this small group learning experience. So as, again, many of you know, Grace Truth 1.0 and Grace Truth 2.0 are two parts to a small group learning experience on faith, sexuality, and gender. It covers theology, it covers various Bible passages. It covers relationships, how to, if you're straight, how to talk to LGBT people, how to love LGBT people. It answers some pushbacks to the traditional view of marriage. It is a one-stop shop, an A to Z small group learning experience for Christians who want to engage this really, really important conversation about faith, sexuality, and gender. So why do I say all that? Because we are offering the small group leaders kit at a discounted rate of 50% off. We sell the leaders kit for $39.95. We are now offering it for the month of November for $20. If you put in the promotional code RAW, R-A-W, then you will get the small group leaders kit for 50% off. Now, the small group leaders kit is basically a combination of 1.0 and 2.0. It comes with the books, the DVDs, a small group leader's guide to help leaders understand how to lead a small group into this conversation. And it will get you started. All you'll need to do if you want to lead a small group on this very important conversation, then other people in the group will need to purchase their own copies of the book. But that's all they'll need to do. If you have the small group leaders kit, then you as a leader are completely prepared and ready to go to lead a conversation on faith, sexuality, and gender. So again, that's go to centerforfaith.com, centerforfaith.com. Go to our store link. You can't purchase this anywhere else. It's not on Amazon. Centerforfaith.com. Go to our store link. Enter in the promotional code RAW, R-A-W. That's RAW, R-A-W. And you will get an instant 50% off of your purchase of the small group leaders kit for the month of November only. So time is a ticking. Okay. My guest for today is somebody I've been wanting to talk to for at least 2 or 3 years. My goodness. Jackie Hill Perry is an incredibly talented human being who has an amazing testimony. And you'll hear a bit of that testimony during our conversation. I love Jackie Hill Perry for the fact that she says it like it is. She loves the truth. She loves the gospel. She loves Jesus. And she's just not at all ashamed of the gospel, as Paul says no Christian should be in Romans 1:16. And so Jackie Hill Perry is a hip hop artist. She is a spoken word poet. She's a teacher. She's a preacher. She is incredibly thoughtful. And she just released her new book, Gay Girl, Good God. That's Gay Girl, Good God, put out by B&H Press. And I am so excited to have this conversation. You're going to really enjoy it. Please welcome to the show, Jackie Hill Perry. All right, welcome back to another episode of Theology in the Raw. I am very, very excited to talk to Jackie Hill Perry. Jackie, thanks so much for being on the show. And if you are listening on the podcast, then you don't see where Jackie is at, but she is actually in her nanny's car recording this, yeah. So her two kids who are asleep don't wake up. So thanks for being willing to go to the car and do this podcast.
Hey, you got to do some strange things to keep the nap going.
Man, that is gold. A 6-month-year-old and a 3-year-old who are actually asleep. Yes. You don't mess with those kids, man.
No, because if they wake up, then they act crazy, yeah. And then they act crazy towards me, and then I act crazy with them. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Why don't we just let's start. Give it a little bit of background of who you are, and I mean, you've had quite the journey, and I think a lot of people listening probably know a bit of it, but for those who don't, explain to us who Jackie Hill Perry is.
Yeah, I'm a black girl that was raised in St. Louis, a single parent home. My mother loved me well. My dad loved me sometimes. Grew up, kind of had, you know, some things that I noticed early, had what I think would be gender confusion, same-sex attraction, was molested at 6 or 7, got introduced to pornography around 7 as well. Wow. So just became way too sexually aware way too early. I kind of went to church. Not my mother wasn't a believer, but she had me go to church with her what would she be called? Sister-in-law, who was my aunt, who was a believer.
Okay.
And so I went to church every week for like, you know, 10 years straight. And that's when I heard about Jesus and the gospel, but none of it was attractive. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah, I love God. I think I love God because I was baptized at 5. So it was kind of that. So that's my life. Got saved. Now I do poetry, teach, write, music, and mother, 2 children with a husband whose name is Preston as well.
I know. I just, you know, every now and then I'm not on Twitter too much, but sometimes I'll pop on your account. You'll be talking about Preston this, Preston that. I'm like, I'm getting a shout out. I'm getting a shout out from Jackie Hill Perry that I find. No.
And Preston is a really rare name. You don't see a lot of Prestons a lot.
No. Most of them are white too.
Show this, not from, but you know, black people, sometimes they had to give their children particular names so that they would get a job. That's what that was.
Are you serious? Really?
Yeah, that's a common thing, is that you don't want the resume to be too ethnic because you don't want them to be turned away.
Wow. Gosh, we can go down that. I got so many questions about that, but let's. So you just came out with the book, Gay Girl, Good God. And I have not read it yet. I want to confess, it's on its way, and I'm super excited to read it. But I can see it seems to be really killing it in terms of like making some waves and reaching some people. Are you happy with how it's been launched and everything?
Yeah, I think it seems to be doing good, whatever good is. I think I've just been encouraged by people actually interacting with the book, because in Christendom, you have so many books being released all the time.
Way too many.
Even behind you, you've probably read 60% of those. And so I think to know that someone has chosen my books over all of the other books to read with, to interact with over the course of a week, I think it's a blessing.
Well, tell us a bit about, I mean, you kind of breezed over pretty quickly. What was your, I mean, you were engaging in same sex. I mean, you would even say promiscuous sexuality in a really destructive way, found Jesus. What was that whole experience like? I mean,
I noticed I felt same-sex attracted early, 4, 5, 6, and that was before the molestation, before I even noticed you know, that my father was inconsistent. So I wouldn't even put my attractions on my trauma. But it was high school, and I was like, you know what, I'm just kind of tired of acting like this isn't here, because it's becoming harder to resist it than it is to actually just. Yeah, I was like, I'm tired of faking, and so I got into a relationship with a girl when I was a senior in high school, and that's when it felt like. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
That's when it felt like, man, why haven't I been doing this a long time ago, you know what I'm saying? And so I just was doing that. I was with her maybe 7 days, because I was 17 and fickle, you know, gay or straight. When you're a child, you don't know how to be with each other for a long time. So after that relationship was when I got into another relationship with a woman, and I transitioned into being a stud, which in the black lesbian community is the woman who kind of presents a hyper masculine self in many ways. And so I was just that, gay pride parades, gay clubs, just gayness, gay community, friends, language even, until October 2018 is when I was just in my room doing something irrelevant, like watching MTV.
Not 2018.
And
not 2000.
No, no, that's this year. 2008.
She just got saved, folks.
Just got saved and got a book deal immediately. no, 2008, I was 19. And, I had this interaction with God that was random, that didn't make any sense. Right. It was kind of like a Damascus moment where I felt God speak to my heart, in such a way where I just saw that all of my sin, lesbianism, and everything else was wrong, and that it deserved death. But Jesus was the only proper alternative for me to turn to and believe in. And so from that day forward, I was a Christian and didn't know that that's what Christianity was. I just was believing that he was right and true and that my sin was worthless. Didn't know that was repentance and faith, but it was.
So wait, it wasn't a Christian that like shared the gospel with you or reached out to you? It's really just God breaking into your life.
Yeah, because Christians, the interactions I had with Christians at that time, they didn't know what to do with me. Right. I don't think they knew what to say to me. It was kind of like, I felt like even when they talked to me, there was always this squinting thing where they were trying to figure me out, I guess. Like, how do I talk to this gay girl? But I think what God used to remind me of the gospel is those years in Sunday school. Because what I remembered was John 3:16. I remembered that for God so loved the world that he gave his son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. That was all I needed. I didn't need to know about atonement and propitiation and justification and all of that. I just needed to know Jesus loved and died for people like me so that we could live. Yeah.
Wait, before you came to Christ, I mean, what was your perception of the church? Was it because you were identifying as lesbian, and did you think that Christians just hate gay people, that's what they do, or did you not have any deep animosity towards the church, or what was your perspective?
I didn't have animosity, but I didn't have trust either.
Okay.
Because it seemed as if that was the sin that just was hated the most. But it also felt, Christianity felt, I don't think the word is intangible, but it didn't feel like something I could be, because I felt like Christians were just people that just said no to a whole bunch of stuff. And I like saying yes. So it's just like, I don't want to listen to Christian music all day. I don't want to not curse people out. I don't want to have to wear dresses down to my ankles. I don't, you know, that's what I didn't know, that these people were actually in love with God, and that it was a spiritual work that had happened and took a place in their hearts where they were able to then choose God. I just thought, you know, they just said the sinner's prayer and they were just better than everybody.
So how did you reconcile your faith with your sexuality? Like, primarily early on. I mean, it seems like it was your faith was identified as leaving your sexuality behind. Would that be an accurate statement? Like, it was a pretty black and white, clean cut.
The way in which I walked out sexuality,
Okay.
Yeah. Because I think to leave sexuality behind, I don't know if that's possible.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Broken manifestations maybe of sexuality.
For sure.
Did you ever work through the theology of sexuality to figure out, are these two compatible? Is there, because even at that point, I mean, 2008, more like 2011, 12, 13, more there's more books and stuff from an affirming perspective, where you have people that are, you know, using the Bible to justify same-sex marriage. Like, did you ever go on that journey to see, is there space for same-sex marriage or no?
I didn't, because I was convinced that the Bible was accurate in what it had to say about sexuality. Even in sin, even when I was actively an unbeliever, I never tried to convince myself that what 1 Corinthians 6:9-10 was saying was not right, or Romans 1. I just really believed that that was right. And I would tell my girlfriends, you know, the Bible actually has things that it, like, God has issue with this.
Yeah.
And they were like, so why are you gay? I was like, because I want to be. It isn't an issue of theology. Right. It's just an issue of my will. I don't want to do what he wants me to do. Yeah. And so, no, I never did that.
Yeah. What do you think the church, because I know, I mean, you've engaged this conversation, you know, last several years, I think, on a pretty public level. What do you think that what do you think the church really gets wrong, just in terms of sexuality as a whole? Like, where's the gaps? Where's the missing, you know, logic? Yeah. Where have we not allowed God to speak into when we think about this, you know, all the debates about sexuality and...
One thing I've been studying a lot of is the concept, or what I think is a theory, but the concept of orientation. Yeah. I think the way we talk about people and personhood is just, we anchor it way too much into who people like or are attracted to. Where to me, it's made heterosexuality as if it's the holiest thing. As if you're a heterosexual, that means you're closer to God than someone who is same-sex attracted might be. When it's like, first of all, why are we identifying ourselves by who we're attracted to anyway? Why is that? Why are we centering our personhood around that instead of our personhood in the fact that we're image bearers of the living God? And so I think that's affected how we see temptation. Mm-hmm. I think that's affected how we see sanctification. Mm-hmm. I think that's affected the way we present the gospel. Yeah. Because people, it's just like, I have conversations with people all the time. And it's like, I want to minister to my gay friend. It's like, what is their name? What do they like to do? Why is that the way you choose to identify them? Hmm. It's just that they're gay and not that they're a person to be loved. And right. that it's so much more to them than who they like. Right. Like, we are too complicated to just center our entire beings around this one aspect of our lives. And so I think orientation has affected the church and yeah. the way we view sexuality in a major way.
It is a very modern way of looking at human nature, a very modern and very extremely and very Western too way of looking at
yes.
the human person to elevate. And I know we blame everything on the sexual revolution, but it kind of, I don't know. I think there's a lot there that in the wake of the sexual revolution, we have way over sexualized our human experience mm-hmm. to where people mm-hmm. now it's like, if they think they can't get married and have lots of great sex, they're like, well, I can't flourish. Like, I can't exist yeah. like that as a human. And it's like, come on, man. Like that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we're idolizing something, a good gift that God's created, but tremendously idolizing it so that when we don't get it, we feel like, you know, like we're, mm-hmm. we can't flourish as a
we're
human.
Missing out.
Yeah.
We've lifted it way too high, mm-hmm. way too high. Yeah. It's an aspect. It's not the whole thing of what it means to be human. Cause to me, I think Sam Alberry speaks to this a lot, but better than I would, but I think there's something to be said about our Savior being a single man.
I know, right?
Yeah. Was he less than human because of it?
I know, right?
He was fully human and fully whole. Even while he did not, or was not able to explore himself sexually.
He would not be hired on at most churches because he's single. He certainly wouldn't be allowed to do any marriage counseling, you know?
Or Paul.
Or Paul, yeah. So you, I haven't followed, I don't pay attention too much to what's going on out there, but I do know enough that you have poked the bear quite a few times in this conversation.
You think so?
Which I like.
Well,
here's where, and when people found out I was going to have you on, the main question that people said, I want to know, like, does she endorse reparative therapy? Like, does she think that people should go get therapy to become straight? Because some people have taken what you've said about conversion, I think, and said, and mapped that on more of a conversion therapy. So,
which is interesting to me. Not to cut you off. It's interesting to me because it's one, have I ever affirmed it? Have I ever said it?
Yeah. So have you not? Even, I mean, I literally don't even know it. I just want.
I've never affirmed conversion therapy, nor have I ever been someone who has said that believers or gay people should come to the Lord to be straight.
Okay.
I've pushed so much to say to the church, God is not calling gay people to be straight. Yeah. He's calling gay people to be holy.
Yeah.
Because heterosexuality is not a fruit of the spirit.
Right.
Self-control is. <That's so good. laughs> In 1 Corinthians 6, 9-11, he does say, and such were some of you, but you were washed, right. You were justified, and you were sanctified in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. He doesn't say that they will not struggle, that they will not be tempted. He says that they've been cleansed. Right. They've been made right with God. That they will continue to be made holy. And so what God has done is that he has changed someone's nature and empowered them to live out a life that loves him and sees their sexuality in the place that it should be seen. And so for me, am I an advocate or am I affirming of it? No, but I can see why people would assume it in some ways, because I think the way people introduce me can sometimes make it seem that way. They'll say, ex-gay you know, ex-lesbian, where it can sound as if, oh, she's saying that she's not gay anymore. And it's just like, there we go with the orientation thing.
Yeah.
No, I'm a human being. And as a human being, am I tempted? Absolutely. Women are still beautiful. I am still inclined to want to enjoy them in ways that is not holy and not godly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, God has given me a greater affection for him. And so even when these temptations well up, I choose him.
So good.
And I think that's what Christianity is.
It's not conversion therapy. It's just conversion. I mean,
it's conversion, but that word has been hijacked.
Yeah. No, and I can. Yeah. So, So it, you're saying it's when you use language of just a what a radical conversion to Jesus is, people just kind of assume that they just use that language and think you're kind of endorsing through the back door maybe conversion therapy. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And I don't even I'm just a big fan of people being interpreted for what they're actually saying. I don't even I'm not even like, oh, everybody needs to line up on this or that. And I've got friends on all across the map on this conversation. What I don't like is that we can't have a conversation and we misrepresent other people. And gosh, I mean, I've been very misrepresented on so many levels. So I know what that feels like, but, there's something I was going to say. Let's transition to your music. You are a poet, a hip hop artist, spoken word poet, right?
Yes.
So is that, are you like, do you tour all the time? Is this like a major part of your life? Is it a kind of a side?
Used to be.
Yeah.
Used to be. For the first 8 years of my ministry, it was primarily poetry. It was this last probably year and a half, 2 years where I started to drift into teaching. Cause that's my greater passion.
Teaching?
Is to teach the scriptures. Yeah. Like even my poetry was me artistically teaching scripture. And so it's like, let me just actually open up a real Bible and do that. And so that's kind of what I do primarily.
How do you, what's your avenue for teaching? What do you do?
Conferences, people call me and say, hey, can you teach on this text? I'm like, sure. That's kind of what it is. When I was at my old church, I just moved to Atlanta recently. Okay. When I was at my old church, I was one of the women's leaders. So I tried to use a lot of my teaching gifts locally with women that I was discipling or with the other women I was leading.
So you're in Atlanta now. What brought about the move to Atlanta?
There's grass. Because I was in Chicago, and Chicago is the grass lots are like, kind of like a buzz cut type of thing. And so we wanted grass and we wanted a home with space. And then our families are converging here randomly. So my mother moved here from St. Louis in May before I gave birth.
Yeah.
My brother's moving here. So we wanted to, I just want to live out the rest of my days near my family, especially my mom, not knowing how much time I might have with her.
Did you say Preston's family is from Atlanta as well? Or
they're from Chicago.
So
Preston's from Chicago. I'm from St. Louis. We met in LA and we're all moving here. Okay. Now,
wow, it's so weird for me to say Preston, by the way. It's just, I'm just so not used to it.
You feel like you're talking about yourself.
I
am,
I just talk about myself. now, is he a hip hop artist as well or spoken word? What does he do?
He's a poet, he's a poet and an apologist. He's on a tour right now doing poetry, and then on the side, he talks about all things apologetics.
Really?
So we have fun. We both read heresy all together at night, and then we talk about it.
That's
our thing.
So do you enjoy apologetics as well? Is that or what would be
I'm intrigued by it because I think even my discussion on sexuality is kind of like a sexual apologetics.
Sure.
In many ways when it comes to him and other religions, I'm intrigued, but it's just a lot of information. Yeah. Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, 5% Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
It's just too much. Yeah. And so I'll leave that to him.
Okay. So you'd rather just teach directly, just teach the text directly without getting into some big debate or.
I don't like arguing. That's not, but that's, I'm not a fan. It's like, oh, you don't believe it? Cool.
Yeah. Have fun with that.
It's just like, but we can dialogue. If someone is willing to dialogue about faith and dialogue about the differences and dialogue about what we both see or think of God, I'm always open for a conversation or debate. Absolutely not.
Do you get a lot of criticism for stuff you've said on sexuality? I mean, I kind of alluded to it earlier a little bit. I mean,
I'm sure I do. I mean, I see one, I don't allow myself to even go into the forums where I would see all of the criticism in its highest form. Yeah. So Facebook comments, YouTube comments, even Amazon reviews. I don't pay too much attention.
Don't read
to
Amazon
that.
Reviews. Do not read Amazon.
I learned that. And so, but there is criticism, and I think I saw it in its like intensity when I went to Harvard and saw the reaction to my coming.
Oh yeah, what was that all about? That was a couple years ago, a year ago.
No, that was probably 10 months ago.
So what was that all about?
Yeah, so I guess I was invited to teach to the Christian organization on campus, mm-hmm. maybe 90 to 100 students. And then when I guess the LGBT plus groups on campus found out that I was coming, they attributed that to hatred and bigotry. And so it began, like, they kind of rounded up some people to do a protest. And so it became an open freedom of speech forum, where they opened it to all the students on the campus so that the protesters could come and protest freely. And so that was just kind of
Did they just sit there and bang cymbals and get on loudspeakers, or did they actually engage in a conversation?
So it was about 60 to 70 protesters, and they came dressed in rainbow, you know, letting us all know who they were and stuff like that. And then some of them had flags about, you know, me being a bigot and stuff like that. And so while I told my story, they were really quiet, really respectful. It was when I started to preach. I think it's not Luke 4, but it's when Jesus is in the garden and he's praying for God to let the cup pass for him. But he says, you know, not my will, but your will be done. And how Jesus denied himself so that he could live out the will of God. And so how much more should we lay aside our own rights to please God according to his will, and his will being that, you know, we should not be sexually immoral. That's the will of God, that Thessalonians says. And so it was when I started to teach that text that the angst rose up in the room. So there were comments, there was scoffing, there was crying, there was cursing me out, stuff like that. But that's expected.
You don't seem shaken up by it at all. Was it like, it hard to go through or not really?
It was just tense. Yeah. It was tense to be. It felt like I felt like I identified with Jesus and Paul a lot more than I would have.
Yeah.
Because they did that all the time. Yeah. Jesus and Paul were always in synagogues saying that Jesus is the way to be made right before God and not the law. But it also gave me a real clear picture of how those who are unbelievers, how they interact with the gospel call to repentance and faith, that it really is a foolish thing, that it really is repulsive when you can't see the good news as being good news. And so I felt like the protesters were there because they felt like I was protesting, or I was bringing some type of information to them that was harmful.
Yeah.
I saw it as, you're here under the sovereign hand of God so that you could hear the gospel and hear the gospel presented in a way that maybe you haven't heard it. Maybe you have heard is people say, all of y'all are going to hell, stop being gay, be straight. That's not my aim at all.
Yeah.
My aim is not. God is saying, whatever is in your way from knowing him and loving him, turn from that so you can be one with the one that you were made for. And so I think my angle is different.
Somebody's robbing a car.
What are they?
You got it. Now, I'm so curious because I've been following a lot of these conversations on, I can still hear you, on college campuses, and especially in the last 2 years. There's just such any idea that students find disagreeable, they say it's harmful, you know, and then they
safe spaces.
And if words cause violence, then we can use physical violence to prevent you from giving verbal violence. You know, it's just it's so dangerous for so many reasons. There's a great book that just came out on this topic called The Coddling of the American Mind, and how.
Ooh,
oh, I you like got to read it. You got to read it.
Yeah.
The Coddling of the American Mind, how good intentions are hurting our whatever. But they say there was a distinct shift in 2013, 2014, where there was this massive explosion of labeling everything harmful that's really just disagreeable. Because, I mean, when you talk about the content of your speech, you're basically, I mean, summarizing the most basic aspect of a Christian sexual ethic held by over a billion people on the planet. Well, no, if you add Muslims and Orthodox Jews, I mean, any monotheist is going to say sex outside of male female marriage is sin. And if you want to embrace this deity, this religion, then that comes with it. Kind of like, you want to be a Jew, you stop eating shrimp. You want to be a Muslim, you observe Ramadan. If you want to be a Christian, you observe a Christian sexual ethic, which is held globally. You know, like, if that, hearing that idea, you think is harmful, you can't function in the society if that. I mean, I think it really is just it's not only an intellectual cop out, like refusing to actually deal with it, but it actually, it in and of it, when you label ideas you disagree with as harmful, that actually that will end up producing more harm because you're not going to be able to function in life. Sure. You can't be around anybody that disagrees with you. It's just it's so dangerous. Fragile. Yeah.
And you hinder your growth as a human being.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a convenient way to do what Romans 1 has said we all do, which is to suppress the truth by our own unrighteousness. Is that if your truth does not line up with my truth, then your truth is bad. And it's like if that's the way we're gonna go throughout this life, then we're not gonna see Jesus. Because he said some hard stuff. I think Jesus was harder than most of us are willing to be.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
For him to go into these spaces and call these people broods of vipers.
Yeah, yeah.
For him to say you are a child of the devil, your father. I would be terrified to go on anybody's campus and say, yeah, you're a child of the devil. I would be protesting so bad. You know what I'm saying? But that was the Son of God saying these things. And so is that harmful? Yeah, it's harmful to my idols.
Yeah,
sure.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Was there did you see any fruit come out of the conversation? Anybody that was like, kind of like, oh, I was expecting something worse and now I want to listen to you more? Or?
Well, I opened it up to say, hey, I'm at this time I was pregnant. I was like 6 months pregnant. And so I was exhausted. Yeah. But I said, I can stay an extra hour, 2 hours for anyone who wants to dialogue with me. And the only people that came up to me were believers. And so to me, it was like, I don't think for them specifically, I don't think they wanted to engage in the conversation. I think they just wanted to state their disagreement, but not engage on how we can figure this out and flesh out the disagreement. So. Was there immediate fruit? There might be.
Yeah.
I really believe that God is able to do to them and to everyone else the same way he did to Saul, is to convert them by the same means that they are against.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's good at that.
That's so, I mean, and I get all that. And I appreciate your perspective. It is, to me, it's just so frustrating and I've had this happen to me when I speak on the topic too.
Yeah.
I've had people come up during a Q&A after I give a long talk. Then I'll have this happened a few weeks ago. Then during the Q&A, some guy comes up and he doesn't go to the school I spoke at. He didn't hear my talk, but he comes with a question.
Yeah.
He didn't like my answer. And then he kind of like, you know, and I'm kind of pushing back really graciously, but like, hey, explain this, that, whatever. And he didn't want anything to do it, walks out. I'm like, you're not actually wanting to engage in a conversation. You're just wanting to either shut me down
be
or
mad.
Whatever. And I'm like, I want to have an actual conversation. Like I'm willing to learn from you. Maybe there's something you would say that I you know, want to listen to. And it's just so frustrating. People don't actually want to have a conversation, you know?
And I've always wondered if there's a fear there, and this is an assumption, but if what I am saying is true,
right,
then that means you're accountable to believing it. That means that if what I'm saying is true, then that means you have to repent and relinquish all of your idols, whether that's sexuality, pornography, whatever the case may be, and fling yourself onto the mercies of Jesus Christ. No sinner in human history wants to do that apart from the grace and mercy and kindness of God. And so why would you want to engage with me and just so happen to find out that you're wrong?
So for you, it's kind of like almost like, of course they would respond like that because they're suppressing the truth and unrighteousness. Or
there's no way I would ever go. Even Christian campuses, I expect pushback.
Yeah.
Rosaria Butterfield went to Wheaton and got protested.
Yeah.
Wheaton.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, if the Bible is true, then what I'm talking about sounds dumb.
Yeah. If
it's true. Unless the way I'm talking about it isn't the way Jesus was talking about it, and the world should welcome me with open arms.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, in my experience, in this conversation, it's the Christian, usually straight, mostly white, under 30-year-old affirming Christians who are the most hostile towards me. My non-Christian gay friends are like, dude, love what you're doing. You're like helping the church love gay people better. It's great. You know, of course you believe what you do. You're a Christian. Like to them, it's not.
Yeah.
But it's, and even, there's so much lack of understanding, misrepresenting, and just a desire to tarnish, I think, because people don't want to be faced with what if I'm wrong? What if I need a challenge and leave something behind?
That's a terrifying thing.
Yeah. So are you do you speak on this topic quite a bit? I mean, from your book and everything, or is it?
The book, I think I speak on it maybe monthly, but not often. Okay. But I'm sure in the coming months,
yeah,
that will probably be what I speak on the most.
Do you enjoy it? Is it a topic you like to engage in, or you do it because you feel like God's given you a voice for it?
I enjoy it because I think this is what God is kind of leading me to do and wants me to do. And I think there's still so much misunderstanding about it all. Yeah. Like there's so much confusion. And I think Christians have just overcomplicated it in so many ways. This is like, someone came up to me 2 weeks ago and was like, yeah, so how do I minister to my gay uncle? They're going to be over our house at Thanksgiving. I was like, you know what? I don't think I've ever had or heard someone ask that question about their drunken uncle.
I know, right?
People don't say, my drunk uncle's going to be there for Christmas. I really don't. I don't know how to talk to him. What should I do? Like, what you do is you love the man and you talk to the man. And then when things come up or situations arise where you can address his sin and point him to Jesus, you do it. But you don't overcomplicate it. You recognize that this sin is who he is and what he does. But it needs hope and it needs grace. There isn't this methodology that you have in embracing all of your other family members that are sinful. Yet when it comes to same-sex attraction, that's just the one thing that we feel as if we are ill-equipped to handle when I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. Well, I've heard countless stories of people coming to Christ who are gay or lesbian, and the turning point for them in many cases was, I was treated like a normal person by the church. Like I came over to the house for dinner. I came over to the house for dinner. I thought that they were going to like mock me and beat me and whatever. I was scared to death to go to their house. I came in, they asked me honest questions. They didn't interrogate me. They gave me food. We gave hugs and they left. And my whole worldview was like turned upside down because I was treated like a human being.
Because the expectation is that you're going to just bring out Romans and Leviticus. Yeah. And all of this over meatloaf.
Right.
And it's like, is that how you came to Christ?
I know,
is that every time you went out to eat with somebody, it's like, so you know you're a sinner, right?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't work like that. Just be a human and be normal. And when the gospel comes up, it comes up.
That's awesome. So good.
Yeah.
Well, Jackie, I'm going to wrap things up. I'm actually... it looks like my Zoom chat thing is counting down and is about to close out for some reason.
Well, look at that.
I don't know why that is. But anyway, I want to respect your time, too. I know you got kids to look after. But thanks so much for being on the show. I so appreciate the, oddly enough, the clarity of your voice, despite some people misinterpreting something you said. To me, I've never it's never been unclear to me. And just I love how you are so centered on the gospel and everything else is under the shadow of the gospel of Christ. I think we wouldn't overcomplicate so many topics if we kept it that simple. So thank you so much for that clarity and that passion. Well, so good.
Thank you, Mr. Sprinkle.
Call me Preston.
Okay. I got you.
Take care.